Good afternoon, everyone. It is 1:30 p.m., September 27th, 2023. We're actually starting a series of three informal hearings with Otter Tail Power, but they'll be dealt with separately. And so the cases are PU23275, 23283, and 23290. And I would summarize them as all dealing with advanced metering and distribution technology and then the cost recovery and tariffs involved with that. It looks like Matt. Okay. I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Federchick, do you?
I do not.
Okay, so since we have a lot on our plate, and if possible, we're kind of hoping to get done a little before 3:30. Because we have another thing to do, but if not, we have that much time scheduled for this. So I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Haugenhoff, for this portfolio holder.
Well, thank you, guys.
Forgot one thing. I forgot two things. I want to emphasize that this is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are disputed details that come up, we'll have to wrap up and issue a notice of hearing. And other than the portfolio holder, the applicant goes first. But before we do any of that, I've introduced my fellow commissioners. If we could go around the room, have everyone introduce themselves into the microphone for the record and state your titles too, please.
Chris Hansen, North Dakota Public Service Commission, Public Utilities Analyst.
Victor Shook with Commission Staff. Director of Public Utilities.
Brian Johnson, PUC Staff Legal.
Rob Frank, Staff.
Matt Olson for Otter Tail Power Company. I'm the Manager of Regulatory Strategy and Compliance. Lots of things.
Mm-hmm. Paula Foster with Otter Tail Power Company, Supervisor of Regulatory Analysis.
Ben Christensen, Otter Tail Power, Supervisor of Energy Measurement and Control.
Rebecca Michael with Otter Tail Power Company, Manager of Communications.
Amber Stahlberger, Otter Tail Power Company, Manager of Regulatory Analysis.
Amber, I wasn't fast enough. What did you say is your last name?
Stahlberger.
Thank you.
And Chair Crispin, we do have a couple of representatives online. They can maybe introduce themselves as they are called upon, or if they can.
Why don't you just go ahead and let's just put them on the record now.
Okay, and I'm not sure exactly who might be there, but we have at least two or three, I believe.
Chris Sitlan and Fiji, Pricing Analyst.
Wendy Olson, Regulatory Compliance Specialist.
Thank you, Lana and Wendy. We may have a third join later, but we will do so. We'll introduce her when she comes.
Okay, thank you. Sherry?
Well, I'll try it again. Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you guys so much, Otter Tail, for being here and being flexible and getting all three of these cases in. We do appreciate it. As Chair Christman said, we will let you guys start. I know you have presentations, so I'll have you go through them. And I would just ask, how do you want it for us, if we can ask questions as we go, or if you want to wait until the end? Matt, I'll.
I think the conversational tone of just asking questions as we go through is the easiest, at least from my perspective. So
Okay. There
are some things that we may end up covering later in the presentation, but we'll try to indicate if there's further information that we'll come to when we respond, but please just ask away.
Okay, will do. So I'll turn it over to
okay.
you to go start going through your presentation.
Okay, very good.
And at this point, this is for PU-23-275.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, we'll start there. We do have separate presentations or separate materials for each of the three dockets today. We'll pause in between each of those if necessary. And the materials are really just to guide our conversation. So it isn't that there's anything new here you haven't either already seen through our filings or that, you know, we can describe, but we'll we'll proceed. So I have experts with me. My name is, again, Matt Olson. I get to be the MC, I guess, but that's because I have no real expertise. I just have to rely on other people. So we have a vision slide there. You know our company well and what we do for the communities we serve, but those things are represented even in the dockets that we're talking about today, certainly in the ways we communicate with and to and get information from our customers. My introduction today is a lot along those lines. So I'll first turn to the agenda here. So for the 275 docket, we'll talk here a bit about some of the tariff changes that are required for our new system implementation. Ben will talk a little bit about some of the meter functionality, some of the new things that are coming along with our AMI program. Rebecca will talk about the communication plan, how we intend to roll this out to our customers, trying to get ahead of many of their questions, but not too far ahead of it, so she can talk more about that. And then certainly the ability for customers to opt out, we'll have some dialogue about that as well. So the next slide there is really just an introduction to setting the frame for what we're contemplating here. The rider, which will be our second item here, dealing with advanced metering and distribution technology, includes a few different components. I have not. Okay. You're on me? Thank you. AMI is a major component that we're discussing here today. There are a couple other things that are included in that same bucket, but they are really part of a suite of things that we are offering to our customers, and it's great enhancements for the way that Otter Tail can serve our customers. It also provides a lot of functionality for our customers in how what they can do, how they can experience their electric usage and be engaged customers. Many customers may not want that. They just like the lights to turn on when they flip the switch, and that's great. But there are others who want more awareness in terms of what's happening on a day-to-day or moment-to-moment time frame, and historically we've not been able to give them that look, and in the future we will be able to do a lot more, so that's very exciting. Within the customer experience enhancements, these are kind of beyond the things that are just the systems additions. We previously were here and spoke about the bill redesign, and so that's underway. We have a new customer engagement portal, which we'll discuss here. It interacts quite well with be integrated with some of the data that's going to come out of our new advanced meters and provide that to our customers. We've also just rolled out a new website, new look there, and it's been a great enhancement, a lot of features there, and a new look. We have an app that our customers can use, and that seems like that should have been done a long time ago, but we just didn't have the capability to make that useful for our customers, and now we do. And we're going to enhance that. Some of these products are going to play into that. So, again, that's a major way that we can communicate to and from our customers, and we're hoping that it's going to bring a lot for them, functionality and usability. And then there are some enhancements for potential rate designs that the data that we get from our customers and usage timing that are going to really be transformed by new meters. Okay, turning the page there, I'm on now slide 5. I really want to talk about sort of the enhancements that the advanced metering technology is going to bring. Communications are a major component for us to be able to know the real time and the periodic usage for customers, the status of customers who might be out. So right now we monitor outages at a kind of a substation level, more or less, and we know everybody who is fed off that substation, and we assume if that, if we have an outage on at that metering point that the customers downstream are offline. But likewise, if that line is in service, we assume the customers are on unless they tell us otherwise. When we get to the point of having AMI meters deployed, you will know customer by customer who's out, because you're going to get that data point on a much more granular level. Granular data from a usage perspective is a major thing. I was talking about that in terms of timing of usage, you know, whether, you know, customers might be able to switch some of their usage to off-peak times. Historically, that's been, we might guide them for that, but now we're going to know very specifically who's using what and when. So we'll have a lot better data there. Improved rate designs and options, the time of use and time of day rates that are related to that timing can be improved. And as we go forward and have that better data, we can feed that into how we design those rates. And then there are great remote capabilities. Ben can speak to this more in detail, but being able to shut a meter off remotely without having to deploy staff to go out there and make that happen is useful in a variety of circumstances, but one of which is pretty common is, you know, just households moving in and out. You know, you got an apartment building or a house that's, you know, got tenants that are ending at 1 month and the new customer comes the next day. You know, we can remotely turn the meter on and off and start servicing a new name. So not having to deploy staff in those situations would be really useful. I think that's all I want to cover there. I do want to introduce or discuss here our request for a variance. I have on the right column of that, right column here are the rules that, and in bold in particular, that we are requesting a variance from. And really this is to, you know, accommodate how billing will change under the AMI structure from what it is today. The most significant change is represented by the pictures on the left column. I guess these wordings on the right, the pictures there are on the left. The current depiction showing the meter reading numbers, and then it does kind of below that show the total usage. In the future, we'll show just the usage quantity, and that is partly because the way the metering functions will not be just a read every 30 days, but it will be the data captured over that 30 days in all the various intervals throughout that time frame. So every 15-minute interval for that whole time period added up to your total consumption at the end of the month.
So it takes
a
read every 15 minutes? Is that what you said?
Yes, yep. And again, Ben will talk more about these a little bit more in detail, but the intervals, the meter is capturing usage for every 15-minute interval. That's a that's the time period. And every usage bucket, every 15 minutes, is its own bucket of usage with a timestamp. And then those are added up for that total monthly consumption that gets billed. And specifically for the time of day and time of use customers, where the timing of the usage matters for the rate they're on, including the meter reading, becomes really not helpful. What's more important is what usage did you have in each of the applicable rates, and so that's what we're representing here.
So I just want to stop you there, and I've voiced this before, but this is the first thing in all this that I still find disappointing. You talk on the previous page about communications, status, granular data. And then the next page, the first thing we do is take away their ability to see what their meter reading was at the end of last month and look at it. And, I mean, to this day, but it was because of my previous life, I have 5 different meters from 2 different companies, and there were times when we were checking, like, okay, I've started doing something now, and it's taken a lot of electricity. Let's watch this for a few days and see that meter go and get an idea how much we're using here before we do it for a whole month. I just don't know why you wouldn't continue. You're measuring the kilowatts because you're charging by it. Why can't they know what it was at the end of their billing period?
Yep, I can understand that, certainly. And it isn't meant to take away the information from the customers. It's partly the way they can get that information. The amount of usage that they're using in that period useful. If they go out to look at the meter, aligning that meter read with the timing of when it might be represented on their bill, you know, when you look at your meter versus what's represented here, it's almost never going to match. So I think that showing it here actually creates more confusion than it's helpful. We have other, like this portal that I mentioned, where we can show the usage data on the more granular level. And I think that gets more at that question that you're asking about, the customer people say, what was my usage during this time period? We can show exactly what that is if you see it right there.
How about, so maybe this gets to Randy's point, will the meter itself still show a readout of the total kilowatt hours? So if the customer goes out there and actually looks at their physical meter, will they be able to see a kilowatt hour counter that'll say this meter is used blah, so many kilowatt hours?
Yep. And just so I don't say it wrong, I'm going to defer to Ben here, who's more the meter expert.
Yes. Yep, the meters will... thank you. The meters still do have a meter displayed, total kilowatt hours used, since the meter was installed. Okay. We don't reset that, and that stays there. What Matt has been describing is the interval data that we're accumulating for every 15-minute period that goes exactly with what Commissioner Crispin is asking for. How can I see the granularity of this very specific thing that I've now changed? How is that impacting? And we feel that granular data over those 15-minute buckets will help show that, to say, okay, I started this at a specific time, I ended at a specific time. How does that change what I'm used to seeing? And we'll have that historical data available for our customers.
It's interesting. Okay, and so you just assume, you don't sell them on SA because you don't allow an opt-out, but you just assume that they will trust all of your electronics. But this does help some that it is going to be on the meter. So they can go out, write it down what that meter shows, and come back 3 days later and see what it's showing now and get an idea. So that helps. I still don't know why it would be so hard to include on the bill. But it's less of a point, I guess, than as long as it's on the meter.
I know we're going to get to the opt-out in just a little bit, but the opt-out is an opt-out of communications. The meters are still going to record the 15-minute interval data as part of our meter fleet refresh that we're doing as part of this project. So all customers will have a meter that records 15-minute interval data to help with exactly conversations like this. How can we help you understand where and when you're using your energy to help clarify and help customers understand?
To just to Randy's point on the bill or what you're showing, I mean, I get that you're collecting it in 15-minute increments, but you still would be starting at a 15-minute increment and ending. So couldn't you still include that, the beginning and the end use meter readings in the bill?
Yeah, for customers on certain rates, we probably could have that capability, whether it's regular or on demand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For others, we would still have the capability, but the... like for those on a different time of use kind of rate. For those customers, the beginning and end are not helpful. But for those on a more basic residential rate, I think we could show that. Part of it is the consumption is the important piece of information that they need to know, more than matching it up.
A certain level of comfort, even I have it, in seeing those numbers and like doing the math yourself. You know, it's goofy, but it's, especially if you're an old stodger, not that there's any in this room, that have done that for years. So I don't know. I if it's possible, it might just be one of those creature comforts that a decent number of people like, and they might help them trust the new technology a little bit more.
Just one quick question. What was the impetus for taking it off the bill? Was it the software that goes with the meter didn't include it, or was it a conscious decision that you made to do that? Or, you know, I guess that's kind of a good question.
We also have some customers who are on, or many customers who are on more than one rate. So if I have one meter that's showing the meter readings because it's on a rate that works for, and another meter that's not, now I'm asking why the difference. And that's pretty common if you're on a controlled rate or a time of day rate for this meter, and then you have your other basic service under different meters. So part of that is a consistency across our billing terms.
It helps a lot that it's on the meter.
Not frequently.
I have a question. I mean, I understand their point, and at first, you know, reading this and coming from where I did, I was used to that meter reading on different things. But when you talk about customer enhancement and wanting that, doesn't the app and the portal that's available to customers could give them some of the same questions that they have? It's just learning something new, and that's a fear factor, but there's a lot that's available to your customers through those, too, to sit and say, and that information would be on there, too, right? The kilowatt usage, so, I mean, there's, maybe you're going to talk more about the app and stuff like that, but.
I believe we do touch on what may be available in the app in the future as we develop the suite of products as we roll them out.
In the portal?
Yep.
Is it okay as you get there?
Those products are very much meant to provide that granular data to customers on a, not just waiting a month to see it later, just like Commissioner Prisner was describing. If I want to know in the past 3 days if I've used a great deal more of energy than I previously was, I should know it now as opposed to a month and 3 days from now. So it's helpful that way.
I think the point is, like, there's a certain number of customers that aren't going to do that, and probably the group we're talking about is not in that category that's going to download the app and go out and monitor. But they will look at the bill and do their math. So, like, to the extent we can accommodate the various levels of comfort with the new technology and the old technology, I think we should, within, our ability to do that. Just because, my dad would never have gone out and uploaded an app and gone out and figured that. And if he did, it would have been painful for all of us because we would have been doing it for him. And he was a proactive guy. So, anyway.
I have a couple granular questions for follow-up. So, I thought I had heard you say for the total kilowatt hours used, you're going to be totaling up all of those 15-minute increments to come up with that number. So my concern with that is rounding. So certainly you're going to have to round up or down at some point on kilowatt hour usage and probably down to that 15-minute level. So could that result in, let's say, over the course of that month, a customer actually using 1,000 kilowatt hours, but the total of those 15-minute intervals, totaling up to like 1,005 kilowatt hours just because of rounding?
Are you ready to speak to that? Sure. Rounding?
We always round down for the customer. We only bill them a full kilowatt hour.
Okay.
That is some of the discrepancy you see between a meter reading and the interval data once you start digging into it. The meters do get to that granularity of you can see a 101.5 kW. You can see that at the granularity, but what we bill on is the whole kilowatt hour.
Okay. So, well, that's, but when you bill on full kilowatt hours, but when you're totaling all those up, so like when it's totaling those 15-minute intervals, is it giving you 6.25, 7.1, and then you're totaling that up into a total? Or are the 15-minute intervals, I don't know, what's wrong with that word?
Increments or
is it only doing the full kilowatt hour on those as well?
it would be representing the full kilowatt hour on those as okay. well, so that your interval data equals what your register read would have been.
Okay.
What you would see on your meter, you can total up your intervals so that they are equal. And that's how our systems validate customer usage as well, is the systems use the meter read off the meter, which we collect on a nightly basis, and they look at the 96 intervals from yesterday mm-hmm. and make sure that the usage over that 24-hour period equal.
Okay.
It's a way for us to do a checks and balance to make sure that the meter is still accurate and
sure.
we're charging the customer should.
Okay.
So
then on those 15-minute intervals, anything from 6.0 to 6.9 kilowatt hours would show as 6 kilowatt hours.
It depends on what system you're looking at
okay.
from the customer facing.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. We wouldn't. The total would still be the same because you can only have that energy in that 15-minute bucket.
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. Then next question is as far as when we bill for things like fuel and purchase power adjustment, those things can change on a monthly basis. And historically, it's just been an estimate, right? So you used 1,000 kilowatt hours, and we did your reading on the 15th of the month, so you have about half of those of that usage we assume in month A and half of that in month B. Are you going to now be able to specify, okay, you used 1,000 kilowatt hours and 700 of those existed in month A and the other 300 were in month B? Not going to do that. I see a shaking head over there. No?
I think in theory the data is there for that, but I don't think that we're going to go away from it quite so soon. Maybe Amber's right.
The billing system that we use only takes in one register read. It does not take in two, so we cannot break it out between time periods. So
okay.
we'll still do proration.
Okay.
The bill.
Okay. But that's a possibility for the future. Maybe. If not, that's it's just a question.
In the near future, right?
I would say the data supports that.
Sure.
Whether the systems can support that or not.
Okay.
To be something that can.
Okay. That's all I have. Thank you.
I want to touch on one other thing that Ben already called out here a little bit, but it's related to the variance request, which is the way the data is captured. So we talked about the 15-minute intervals, and then, as Ben noted, every day, midnight, that data is brought back to the meter data management system. So the rules describe a monthly read, roughly a 30-day time frame. So our billing will still occur on that roughly a 30-day time frame, but it will be essentially 30 individual days worth of data captures that are coming back. And each one of those data captures has all of the 15-minute increments from that day included. So it's just a little bit of a, you know, how we're capturing the data is different than how it is today when we go out there and read the meter once a month.
Do you have a set of customers that ends their billing cycle every day in a month and it's just a revolving thing, or do you have a
20,
certain number of ends?
20 billing cycles spread throughout the month. So
20?
Jeez.
And is that how you intend to keep going, or once
yes,
this is
the,
all
the
electronic, it
can
just be all the end of the month or something? It'll continue this.
Yeah, a lot of that has to do with the billing processing, the machine having to run the bills and actually print, you know, some
sure.
sets
okay.
of bills, and so they are spread out.
Okay.
So, Matt, do you have a proposed language for the variance? Like, what exactly yours would say?
I didn't include that in the presentation here. We do have...
Okay, it's in the filing. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fine. I'll find it.
And that variance would really be a variance to our rules, so we don't necessarily need specific language other than to say we grant a waiver from this provision.
Oh, it is
our
just
rules.
I see.
If Jack
got
listening,
it.
Listening, it would be interesting to get his take on whether or not we can waive that rule. I think we've done it before, so we probably can. But he's
it would be helpful to have it, like, so we could explain it to somebody what it actually is. Do you know what I mean? Somebody says, well, how are they doing it? every 15 minutes, rounded certain ways, and added up in another certain way. I mean, it would be good to be able to just state it, what it is, the variance.
Sure.
Chris is looking forward, I think, the specific language of the, of
well,
the proposal.
Yeah. Oh, sure. I'll pull that up.
Oh, is it this? Interval billing. AMI meters will capture usage in 15-minute intervals, and your bill is based on computation of 15-minute intervals in this billing period.
Mm-hmm.
I know it was in here.
It's pretty simple.
Okay, I think we can keep going.
Okay. I'm going to turn it over to Ben to describe some of the details of our meter functionality.
Thanks again. We're really seeing a paradigm shift in the technology that's available from the industry when it comes to endpoint technologies. We're used to meters having just a kilowatt hour reading, right? And that's the only functionality they have. We actually have a hard time purchasing a meter with that basic functionality now, and it's really rolled in the high-level functionality you used to see at the substation level is now available in every meter, thanks to the technology advancements that we're seeing. So really, that's what we have available to us now in our whole meter fleet that we're going to be deploying through AMI, is the ability to do 15-minute interval data for all of our customers, present that, communicate with that meter over the air to be agile and adjust with where the industry is going and where our customers tell us they want us to go with the information, and present that to them in a way that they're engaged in their energy usage and able to react along with it. So we as a company are trying to leverage our meter fleet to support that. So we don't have to have the restrictions we've had. Frankly, we don't get the opportunity to reset our meter fleet almost ever. So this is, I've been in my role about 10 years, and this is the first time that we've got to do a large scale deployment of meters. And it's pretty exciting for us to be able to offer this and have the company positioned to take advantage of this technology. So we really do have an energy sensor at each customer location now, and it's pretty exciting for that. So with that comes the inherent increased accuracy that we get over just the advancement of technology. Our current meter fleet is accurate. We've done many projects throughout a year to make sure that we maintain that accuracy, and now we get just a whole reset of that fleet, and pretty exciting. We also get that power quality sensor at our customer location, where now we are becoming a more informed company about what's happening on our distribution system. We rarely have that kind of visibility to the endpoint. We have a lot of visibility of our transmission system, and now we're bringing that technology to the endpoint so we can see when a customer is out of power. Matt mentioned that earlier. We'll also have, similar to what we're doing with the energy consumption, we're actually doing that with voltage as well and current. We're doing a profile so we can see what's happening on our distribution system for the power that we're delivering, so we can understand where we have opportunities to improve our distribution system. So that'll be pretty exciting advancements that we're enabling and looking forward to taking advantage of things as well. So I mentioned the two-way communication, just more frequent gathering of that information. We're going to read the meters on a daily basis, not wait for that 30-day and hope that the meter's still working. We'll know on a daily basis what that reading is, so we know that if we have meters that we need to service, meter failures, we can go and address those sooner and not have a larger gap in data that we need to address with the customer if we have a failure and when we have a failure. And then the two-way part of that is the meter notifies us of what's going on. Is what's the health of the meter? What's the power quality? Are the lights on? Are they not? And we can react to that as a company to give our customers a better service to them. So I have included on the next slide just how the meters communicate, just a small overview. It is a bit of an eye test as I look up at the screen, but our meters talk over an RF mesh technology. It's a mesh IP, so it has an IP address. It's addressable. We communicate on the 900 megahertz frequency, a popular frequency that's used by, it's an unlicensed frequency, so we do use that together with them. It reports back to a gateway, a central locator, collector that manages that traffic, which then sends it back over the cell system to our hosted environments with Landis and Year, which then delivers it to Ottertail Power through our portals and data delivery. So with that, there are a couple ways to extend the network. It's not just gateway to meter. The mesh comes from what are called routers, the network extender. But then in this case, the meters are also integral to extending that network as well. So it may go gateway, meter, router, meter to make sure that we're talking to each customer, each meter on a daily basis. So meters become very integral to the operation of the network, which is very important in making sure that we have a mesh that not only heals itself, but it gives us the consistency. So, really, I've mentioned it a couple times as we move to the next slide, is these meters allow Ottertail to future-proof to a certain degree what we're able to do. Like I mentioned, we rarely get the opportunity to do a meter refresh, which at times can handcuff when we can move to new rates and provide maybe something that our rates department wants to give our customers. It becomes restrictive for us to do a meter exchange along with that. We lose the value for the company and the customer for the expense that it costs. So really excited to be able to program these meters over the air. So as we move to, for example, a residential time of use type of a rate, we can use the data that's bringing back and more agile move those customers to that kind of an offer, where we can break that interval data down into those time of use buckets and reprogram the meter if we need to show that. So,
do the meters have a demand?
They do.
Capture as well.
All meters will capture a kW demand and a reactive demand. So for those rates that require that, sure, we are going to collect that. We collect it on every meter, just again to help our rates department understand, are our rates capturing the energy usage the way we need to make sure that we're still being efficient in that collection?
Sure.
Yep.
If you is the end delivery always cellular on the communication?
The delivery between the gateway and the meter is 900 megahertz mesh IP.
Okay.
The only cellular is between the gateway and the hosted environment that lands in here. We will have some cellular-only meters that will be the cell network talks directly to them.
Sure.
That just kind of fills in some gaps that was not cost-efficient.
How long can the meter store information? Say there's a large-scale cellular outage in an area. How many days of information can the meter store before something happens with them? Or what happens with them as well?
Yep, good question. Up to 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a non-volatile memory that as long as the meter doesn't even need power to hold that. And so if there is even an outage to the customer for an extended period of time, any usage before the meter went dead will be there when they energize the meter. So it'll store up to 300 days of information.
Okay.
So
the meter can store on itself 300 days worth of information.
Yep.
If you recall the differentiation of the meter that NSP was going to roll out, that's significantly different.
Yep. Our current meter fleet today, for those that do have the ability to record interval data, it's in the 70-day range is what we have. So, and that's really, it's dictated by the number of intervals that you collect and what is on the meter. One of the next things that really helps us on the last point there just reduces the amount of potential field deployed technology we have, trying to minimize the impact that we have to the customer. And this is more of an enabling type of a technology that in development, interoperability between systems, we no longer need a separate interruption monitoring system to tell us when our customers are out. We can utilize the meters, the field area network, the AMI system to do that. So we've always had two systems deployed. Now we'll have one. We feel the meters are really going to be enhanced by our DRMS as well and enhance that offering. Our meters are enabled with Wi-Fi, so we'll be able to provide Wi-Fi connectivity to Wi-Fi-enabled devices. There are Wi-Fi-enabled circuit breakers that will allow us to control load in the future. We don't have a plan for those yet, but those are the types of doors that our technology is opening for us. Okay. more discussion about that in the future, but that's just the kind of where the industry is going and opportunities that we're going to have to be creative and how we deliver those options to our customers.
General question about the selection. These are the Landis+Gyr gear, and I don't have it in front of me, but EVO?
Revelo.
Revelo, right.
Yep.
You know, and looking at other companies that are using, say, Itron or some of the other suppliers, just briefly describe kind of what went into the decision on choosing one versus the other. What were some of the deciding factors on that?
Sure. Itron does have a similar technology. Cost certainly plays a factor in that. This was our low-cost option. We also felt that it provided it fit Otter Tail's needs to support both DRMS and AMI. And we felt the technology was going to be there to provide this future flexibility, along with the suite of products that we got on the meter data management side that came with what's called an advanced grid analytics package that allows us to do that analysis of the power quality of our system to help us drive better, more targeted decisions on system improvements.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
What is the life of these?
It's a 20-year life meter. Expected. Say that.
And what type of guarantee comes with it? Warranty?
We do have a quite extensive warranty describing our contract with Landis+Gyr that supports us over that life of the meter if we do have a mass failure event. It's on a gradient scale depending on how long they've been in service. So everything from a full replacement plus the cost to replace all the way down to replacement of the device only, things like that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. And thinking about customer communications, we spend a lot of time considering what our customers need to know, want to know, when they should know it, and balancing that with a lot of other things that we have going on too. We haven't said a lot about AMI yet, and that was by design, especially with the launch of our customer engagement platform in August. We wanted to make sure that we could successfully get customers converted to that. So it's the new, once they log into otpco.com, it's the new My Meter section of our website, which comes with a lot of new functionality and tools. And so my department is always thinking about, you know, who needs to know what, when do they need to know it, when should we tell them, how should they hear it, so that we're not, you know, as Matt said earlier, too far ahead on communications, but also not too late in making sure that they get the information that we need. So what we're looking at right now really is just getting the information they need when they need it, focusing on benefits first, but also being aware of any concerns they might have and being able to answer those right out of the gate. So benefits really focusing on, you know, visibility into their energy use, especially in those small increments, you know, what other programs or services might be able to be available to them based on the energy that they're using. And then just the long-term savings of the project overall, you know, without manual meter readings, we're able to kind of stabilize some of those costs up front. So it's not, you know, but we have to be clear that it's not like once the meter is installed, the customer is going to see their bill drop. You know, that's not how it works, but being able to explain that, you know, this is a long-term investment that benefits you and how we're working here. And when it comes to concerns, we're really thinking about some customers are a little worried about data protection. What happens to my data? How often are you looking at it? What are you using it for? Can I see it? Where does it go? Where does all of that live? Can you shut me off anytime you want? It's like, no, it's, you know, we're still following the same processes we've had before. And then EMF does come up too, so just making sure that customers know how the meters work. On the next slide here, Matt, I believe, sent over our customer communication plan and some draft content that we've been working on to you. So the draft content is really sort of the, like, kind of everything we would talk about. We'll piece it out in different tactics to different customers at different times. But we've really parceled out four different sort of main audiences that we need to be talking to. Communities is one. You know, at a community level, are we in front of service organizations? Are we speaking to the city council and the mayors? You know, some of those people that kind of tend to get questions or kind of know the, you know, what's going on in town, what's happening, you know, those kind of things, making sure we're in touch with those groups. of course, community or customers directly? Are we reaching out to them? You know, we can't assume that everybody can hop online and find the information that we need, so making sure we're sending out appropriate things via mailed communications, bill inserts, things like that. Considering whether we might need advertising in some places, you know, paid advertising, depending on what the media situation looks like. That's not appropriate for all of our communities, but in some it certainly is. And then we have, you know, a lot of our employees also live in the communities we serve, so we can't ignore that, you know, when I'm shopping at the grocery store, somebody is going to ask me about these new AMI meters that Otter Tail Power Company is putting in. And as an employee of the company, can I speak to that, or can I at least point them in the right direction of where to get information? We're not trying to make all of our employees experts in AMI, but we do, you know, we get asked, you know, about any type of project that we're working on. So how can we make sure that employees know what's happening? And then very specifically looking at our customer care employees. Are they well trained? Do they know how the system works? Can they answer questions? And then are we looking at that information that they're getting from customers to tweak communications as needed to? Like, gosh, we're seeing a lot of questions about X. We might need to update, you know, some of the information we're sending out. Long-term, you know, of course, there's just the pre-meter installation and post-meter installation and just the logistics about, you know, here's when we'll be in your community, this is what we'll be doing, we'll need access to your property. But really thinking through that long-term engagement, too, how can we make sure that we're hearing customers' concerns if they have any? How are we reviewing the information we are getting back, whether it's through social media, you know, transactional surveys, word of mouth, just, you know, what are we hearing? How do we adjust to that if there's things that we can fix through additional communications, different communications, other kinds of pieces, but just making sure that we're doing a really good job, you know, listening to what's happening to them. So
do you have a focus group at all, or?
We do. So we have an online community called Otter Voice, and so it's customers that have opted in to help us with a variety of things. Sometimes it's very simple surveys on, you know, do you prefer this or this, and sometimes it's a little more extensive. So we will be tapping into them, too, to say, you know, we just did a meter installation in your community. Did you have what you need? Did you not? You know, and just being able, especially with the testing that we'll do in advance to test a couple messages, make sure that...
So you haven't utilized them?
We haven't yet, no. Because okay. There were a couple key things, you know, with opt-outs being one of them, that we wanted to have answers to before we asked questions.
So how did you identify your concerns then?
We looked at a lot of what our peer utilities have done, okay. And then also with advice from the vendors too, because they've done a lot of installations as well.
Okay.
Okay, we'll then turn to the opt-out questions, and there may be a few here, and Paula can maybe describe how we've come to our recommendations and our calculations, and then there are some components that Ben is going to talk about here, too, as well. So.
So I guess the way that we started looking at this is we wanted to make sure that we were identifying the cost causation. You know, we want to make sure... We included what we thought it was going to cost us to go to each of these customers' homes and change all these meters or you know, turn the communications off, I should say, and then meet it each month, just so I make sure we captured that properly. So we looked first at our Otter Tail's service territory, which I know you guys are very familiar with, 70,000 square miles and 3 states, very spread out, a lot of small communities. And we do have a number of service reps, but of course not one in every community. So when you look at our structure, we've got about 55% of our customers that live within city limits and about 45% that live outside of city limits. And those outside of city limits customers are about an average of almost 13 miles from a service rep to meter, right? So we looked at a weighted average, and it's about a 6-mile drive for the average meter. Now, if most of them who opt out are in that outside of city limits bucket, then that could, of course, go way up, and our costs could go way up with that extra distance. So then on our next slide, the number of customers who opt out are definitely going to directly affect our business plan. The manual processes would still exist. You know, we're of course hoping for very few opt-outs, and maybe none would be great, but whoever does, of course, that's going to affect us. We aren't going to be able to fully to see the full benefits, I guess, of this effort. We'd be unable to reduce our service rep count through attrition like our normal plan would be. We're still going to have those service reps placed in positions where they can easily get to, well, as easily as possible, get to these customers. And then also the meters, like they were saying earlier, kind of act as extenders for the mesh network. And so if some of these opt-outs are strategically placed where it's not the best spot, it's maybe one of them we would have used for these extenders, then we may have to put in some additional network to support that, additional infrastructure. So that's going to raise our costs as well. And each of those meters, if they're used we can have Ben talk more to this too if you guys are having questions, but they can traffic usage and outage information for up to 20 to 30 meters that one year. And so, of course, we would need some more infrastructure to fill that gap. Did I explain that well enough, Ben? Okay.
So what you're saying is if I opt out and I was supposed to be one of the, my location could have impact on the AMI meters, correct?
It could impact the ability for us, the communications, right, to take place. It's a communications extension. So we would have to install additional network equipment in that area to manage that traffic back to Otter Tail Power.
Then on the next slide, you see our opt-out costs, and this is just, again, based on our actual costs, and so that we would place that cost in the right spot where the people are choosing this option. So customers who opt out would pay upfront for us to remotely disable the communications meter, and then also to replace the meter with the communicating meter when the customer moves or chooses to opt out. So we determined kind of early on that to go out and disconnect the communications rather than replacing the meter would be, we would have to have a meter tech go there. Well, they're basically located for this fault, so our territory is large. So we'd have them going a lot further than if we use our existing service reps that are placed all over our territory. They could go out, replace the meter with one that's communicating, and then that cost the customer and us a lot less money. And the reason we have to do that, of course, is because if they've opted out, we can turn it off remotely, we can turn off that communication, but then it's not listening to us anymore, so we can't turn it back on remotely. We have to go there and actually turn it back on or replace it, like we say. So we decided that would be the best option, and so that's why those initial opt-out costs are less with the remote turn-off than the going out there to actually turn it back.
Quick question. How many crews do you anticipate once you start doing the rollout? How many individual crews do you anticipate will be installing this, or will every meter tech be involved with it?
So we have contracted with a third-party installer to help us with the initial deployment. So the deployment will happen with 16 of their crews, or 2 8-person crews, so 16 people. Otter Tail Power will support with our service reps and meter techs in areas that we need to go back. Like if there's a return to utility location, they couldn't install the meter for some reason, we'll go back and install those, as well as critical accounts. Otter Tail Power will install those meters.
Okay. To that point, what I was questioning was the volume of meters they have and whether you couldn't have some quantity of meters that were already disabled, where, you know, because you would presumably know ahead of time whether or not that people were going to opt out of the program, and in that situation you could potentially install one that's already been disabled and save them the upfront cost. Is that possible, feasible?
It is possible, but it's a similar amount of time to disable that radio in the shop as it is over the air once the meter is installed.
Right.
So, yeah.
So then this, of course, with the upfront cost and the back-end cost being charged right at the beginning, that helps us to make sure that these costs are going to be paid and that it'll keep our bad debts lower. And then we will work with people who want to get on this and need to make payments using our normal payment arrangement plans. There won't be anything special for this, but we would work with people who need us to. All right, and then the opt-out customer count. There are 46,000 approximately residential customers in North Dakota. Only residential customers, of course, would be eligible. And they would have to have our normal, just regular residential rate. Other rates, it just doesn't work with our system to do an opt-out. We need that feedback from the meter to, and somebody else can explain that a little better. Anyway, so there's a list here that shows how many customers we feel would not be eligible for our opt-out. It would be our ineligible rates, customers with two or more missed payments, and customers who have inaccessible meters. We have a lot of meters that are inside buildings, that kind of thing. So this AMI is actually going to really help us with that problem. People will be able to access those readings a lot easier now. And then customers who tamper with the meters, too, of course, are not going to be eligible to opt out. So our total ineligible customers would be about 29,000, leaving a little over 17,000 that would be potentially eligible to opt out. And based on vendor estimates and industry averages, we expect probably about 0.5% would maybe want to opt out, which would leave about 87 people here, 87 customers here in North Dakota.
So with that low percentage, do you feel an opt-out option is viable? I mean, why do you support an opt-out? Because that's a high cost. That's extremely, extremely high cost.
It is. And technically, I guess the company's position is that we'd rather not have an opt-out. But if an opt-out is required, then this is what it would cost us, and then that's how many we feel would probably opt-out. So we're just kind of laying it out there for you guys. Of course, our preference is to not have it.
Have you had that conversation? Have you had any decisions made in either Minnesota or South Dakota on that particular issue, one way or the other?
We have. South Dakota, we're still working there, but in Minnesota, they did decide that we should offer an opt-out, and they approved the costs that we presented, and we did present the same costs in all three states.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to say that, whether it's an individual business or a corporation or a cooperative or what, we all want happy customers. I think that's universal. And, I'm not talking the ranching side, but in my previous life as a cooperative director, and it wasn't a podunk cooperative, if that's what you're thinking. In fact, we were one of the lead investors in building out what has now become the Verizon network in North Dakota, and in fact are the majority owner of the Bismarck MSA that, if you're Verizon customers, you're using today. But when we made those capital calls back in the days, there was a lot of customers, and in fact a lot of our other cooperatives, that thought cellular was a fad and didn't choose to do that. But we persuaded them, our membership, that it was a good move. When we evolved from all varying prices depending on how many people you could call without long distance charge to a more universal situation without the long distance, a lot of people didn't benefit from it, but we persuaded them that it was for the overall good. So, first of all, I think you guys need to persuade your people of the benefits of this system. The next best thing is, because I am almost always in favor of customer choice and would support the opt-out at a reasonable price, which I find this not even in the ballpark of reasonableness. But the last thing, the most insulting thing that I think you could possibly do or propose would be telling people you have an opt-out option, we're just going to make it so expensive that all but the wealthiest among you can afford to do it. I mean, you have lots of customers who probably don't have much more than an $80 bill to begin with. And so you're doubling it plus a $262 upfront cost. It's just, to me, I'll guarantee any proposal that comes with opt-out charges like this, I'm against.
Commissioner Griffin, I think it's good for us to respond just on that, which is that, you know, we're trying to lay out the cost that it cost us to make that happen for that company. So it's just a balance between how to share those costs. If we want other customers to share in the ability for one customer to opt out, we can, you know, propose a lower number. And
I will say, just like in your service territory, there's somewhere that maybe a development didn't get it. Someone's a little further from the other homes than someone else, and you've got extra line. It costs more to serve them, but they all pay the same amount. And so not everyone pays their exact costs of it. And if you do a good job of selling this system and the benefits of it, you should have so few people opting out that these costs shouldn't even be noticeable on Otter Tail Power's bottom line.
I think we believe that it will be very few in any event, because of the reasons you described or that we presented here. You know, a lot of customers will be on board with the benefits. We will certainly, you know, include that in our communications, the efficiencies that it creates, and I do think the number will be low in any event. What we've presented here, and as Paula noted in each of our three states, is how to accomplish this without pushing costs to other customers. And that's the decision to be made, is whether we want it. Like you say, you know, there are other things where we have to put it in a bucket and spread it out a little bit. There are instances where that is the case, and if this is one of those instances that, you know, I think that's, you know, we can take the direction that we're pushing now.
Can I ask some follow-up questions on the pricing again?
Sure.
So I'm sorry if I missed your drilling down here, but on the initial opt-out cost, $62.29. What's that for?
It's to disable the details here for you. The intake phone call, the application processing, because we're going to have to make sure that they meet all of our qualifications, and if they don't, then they won't be eligible. And then the radio remote disconnection and setting that up in our system, because our system is going to be looking for AMI reads, and we need to tell it that.
So reprogramming it for that.
Yeah, not to expect it on that account. And yep. So it's just all that kind of labor. And then also, of course, the meter. Yeah, I said that part. Yeah, the radio disconnection that the meter techs have to do.
Okay, but that doesn't include any on-site stuff. That's all remote.
Yep.
Okay. And then none of that would have to be done if they were going the other way. All of that is extra. There's no communications with the customer at all. We're of a different nature that's occurring for everybody who's opting in, not, you know, who's getting the new meters. Okay. Right? All of that is additional. What you just described, none of that, or any type of communication with the customer for the new meters would be occurring. That couldn't just be switched to this kind of a communication or interaction. What I'm saying is, if you're doing something with every customer anyway, for the ones that opt out, you could do this instead, and that's not an increase in your cost. That's my theory, but you can tell me I'm wrong. That you're not. Does anybody else follow what I'm saying?
I'll tell you, I think you're wrong. Victor?
Okay.
I'm going to lean into this one here.
Thank you, Matt.
I mean, the default is we're replacing the meters as we've been describing. There's no phone call that has to happen with every single customer along the way.
The people that go out on site to put the new meter in, couldn't they go to this meter and do what needs to be done on site instead? And that's not an increase in cost then.
Our third-party meter installer will not have the ability to disconnect our meters. We're not going to give them that kind of access into the device from a security standpoint. We don't want somebody from outside the company, even though they are working for us in this case, to have that kind of ability to manipulate the meters.
So they're going to be putting in a new meter no matter what in every residence.
Correct. Yep.
And so the ones that opt out have to have something extra done to it.
Right. They have
the radio thing.
Yep.
And that has to be done by tech in-house.
We're going to choose to do that over the air and disconnect that communications from Fergus. After the customer has gone through the process of opting out, giving us the opportunity to, as Commissioner Chrisman talked about, give them the opportunity to see the benefits of AMI, and then at that point make the decision if they want to continue to opt out or not. And then we would, from Otter Tail, push the button to send that packet to disconnect the communications. At that point, we would no longer have that communicating meter, and it would turn into a meter that that needs to be read monthly.
So then, as a follow-up, when they decide not to opt out anymore or you have a new customer at that location, why is that not remote? Why do you have to send a truck out?
So we can no longer communicate remotely with that meter. So as part of a move-out process, so if a customer goes out, we have to go and get the end reading to the move-out reading to complete their bill. So when our service rep goes to read that meter manually,
mm-hmm.
at that point they will exchange the meter for an AMI meter. That
got
is
it. All right. I know you talked about that earlier, but now I'm better understanding. And so this estimate that you came up with, 100 and, you know, these estimates was based on how, like, what radius did you decide the average customer would be to require that amount of time, et cetera, like, how did you come up with these averages?
We looked at our total territory and took the distance between a meter and the closest service rep from all over the territory, and that's how we decided. So we took a weighted average, and that was kind of in that slide right there.
Okay.
Showing that the 55% are within city limits, 45% mm-hmm. are without or outside of city limits, and then that's the weighted average distance for our service reps to have to travel one way.
And the meter return shipment?
Yeah, because we would send that meter that doesn't communicate anymore back to the meter techs in Fergus Falls, and then they would enable that communication piece and then test it, make sure everything is working properly and it's going to communicate well.
Well, I'm going to support Randy's first point on persuasion.
Yes.
And I don't like opt-out. I just don't. I think as we move towards this, I don't like the feel that they get, I don't know. I just believe that persuasion and the benefits of it, and if they get penalized so much, that it sets a bad precedent. I don't like that. I would agree with Randy, the opt-out fee is just way too high. I understand from a business sense what you're trying to do. I'm going to tell, just like Randy Chrisman did, and I was in a co-op, and definitely served an area that was big, and we went to advanced metering, and never had the issues or concerns, and I learned a lot on the advanced metering and my usage and peak rebates and different things like that. So I see the benefit, and I'm going to challenge you guys as a company that it can be done, and I look forward to working with my other commissioners on opt-out. I just am not in favor of it.
So you're saying rather than a high opt-out, you want no opt-out?
Correct. Yep. I think it's possible with the persuasion of the company going to their customers on the benefit of it.
But the persuasion, if people still want to opt-out, they can't.
Yeah, I just, it was a...
So it
wouldn't, we moved forward. We're moving forward with new meters. And, It wasn't bad. It wasn't.
Is there something in tariff or something that I don't know about? I'm just the attorney guy. why do you have to go there every month and read it? Why can't they self-report with a period of somebody else verifying that? Or if they want to lie, they get a really big bill at the end of it. Why do we got to charge $80 a month to send somebody out there? Is that required or just what you guys are choosing to?
Thank you for the opportunity. with the self-read option, it leads to a lot of manual processes internally for validating whether that read is correct or not, and what is the right timing to true up on that. Whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, you know, there is going to be a time where we need to send somebody out there to visually read that meter, right? And if that discrepancy is off, it's not going to, the customers are going to say, oh, yeah, that's okay. I'll pay my larger share now because I was shaving or improperly reading my meter to send that in. It's going to happen, and that relationship isn't going to get better. It's an opportunity for us to maintain the automation and the efficiency that we get with AMI to provide that accurate bill to our customers.
Well, I mean, the inaccuracy would be due to their own fault, so I miss it there. I mean, I've got a water meter at my lake cabin. I read it every month and send it in, and then I can opt to basically pay them for the whole minimum use for the whole year. So I'm just wondering why we got to, I mean, to me, the top half of that made sense, the 262 for all that stuff, but just to send somebody out at every month at $80 seems like that could be one of the areas where you could shave some of that cost real quickly.
Is that, do you have a self-read option anywhere in your system currently for any of your customers?
We do.
Okay.
We do. We expect that to go away with the deployment of AMI.
Okay. Yeah. And I guess my point would be, if you have a meter reader there that's reading the meters, other than the validation of the actual number, is it any different if they report the number than if a customer reported the number? I guess what's the difference between if you have to manually in your system?
Via a meter reader or one of our service reps?
Well, either.
Autotel Power doesn't employ meter readers, so that is, again, another avenue that we would have to...
Well, I guess, okay, so if you had a service rep reading it, they're going to do what? Write it down? Or do you have some electronic means that they validated? Or I guess my thought was, if you did, like, three-month intervals to Brian Johnson's point, and you currently allow for that, I don't see that you're losing a lot of the functionality over when they opted out of the system in the first place.
Sure. It really comes down to the volume and removing the efficiency to begin with the automatic reading, not having to have our service reps responsible for that on a monthly basis. And you know, we're assuming that all these customers are in the same cycle. They may be on different cycles. And so now a service rep has to be removed from, you know, servicing lines, building new lines, providing new services, drop what he's doing, hop in his truck, go read the meter, and get that back.
Well, I think to this point was you wouldn't have to do that if you allowed for a three-month interval or something. I mean, granted, if they're getting to the... you know, if you get notification that they're moving, or I don't know how that moves or whatever, I mean, I understand that you would probably want to send the rep out at that point, even if, or if you periodically, every 3 months, you went and verified it or something like that. It seemed like there would be an option there. And then I had a couple questions. I noticed in your, you talked about a payment plan, and I would think with a large amount, if that were that large amount, that there would be some option to at least spread that out to a degree. I understand you don't want to get that backloaded to when they move out and it hasn't been paid. But to Chairman Christman's point, where somebody maybe pays $80, $90 a month, $226 is a lot. And so to have some sort of payment option seems like it would be reasonable. And then my last point was, and your meter reading, you noted that they would have to have a lever-style socket. And I'm not sure if you've got a good idea how many people don't have that, but what discussion went into the cost of that? And because it seems like that could potentially impede your implementation if people don't.
don't have that, or it might cause them to opt out because of the costs involved. Sure. And have you discussed internalizing those costs to speed up the implementation?
Yeah. The lever style bypass is for new installations only.
Okay.
Or a remodel type situation where customers upgrading their system. That's when we require the lever bypass.
Okay.
The majority of our residential customers do not have a lever bypass on their metered socket today. Otter Tail Power, as part of the project, deployment project, is prepared to make modifications to customers' service if their meter socket is broken, just to maintain the continuity of the project. So if it's broken, we're working with local electricians to be on call to help us upgrade that to a new socket. So if the socket's in good working order, we will not be making any modifications or require a customer to put in a lever style bypass.
Okay. And then in that instance, that cost would not be imposed on the customer.
We're going to absorb that into the cost of the project. Yep, Otter Tail will pay for that.
Thank you for that.
Yep.
Any further questions about those things? We do. There's one more slide that Ben had on security concerns related to opt out. Then it goes from like 1 minute.
Yep. Yeah. I'm not going to. I won't add much color to what's in front of you. With opt outs, we realize the safety improvements that come with an AMI system, but now with opt outs, we're increasing the amount of travel that we're going to need to do. Backing accidents are increased while meter reading equipment and potential property damage to our customers' property with those increased truck rolls, slips, trips, and falls, never fun in our environments, and then encounter the dogs and insects become an issue again. Trying to remove that risk from our field personnel and just introduces that again. And then property access is becoming just increasingly a challenge, right? Customers aren't as comfortable with people walking through their backyards as they used to be. There's a lot more security installed. Just question as to why we're there. I just want to make sure people are comfortable, right? I want to respect that and be respectful to their homes and their property. So just want to make those points as well.
When are you looking at, when you talked about your app, in all that, when are you looking at kind of deploying that?
The app is usable today.
Yes, okay.
Yep. A lot of the data that we're talking about for AMI is, that will come as those meters are deployed, which will start in January.
Mm-hmm. And that customer engagement portal and website, all that too, they can log in, and when that goes active, look at information.
That also happened last month here.
Yep. The customer engagement portal went live August 18th. It was mid-August, along with some other website improvements. The app is available. I will say we haven't promoted it a lot yet. The biggest thing was to get current customers into the new platform, and then we'll work on making sure the app is, that they can get to it and are able to download it and use it. So.
Okay, thank you.
Just to be clear, too, there is a software piece to all of that as far as the AMI goes, and I believe it'll be probably closer towards the end of 24 when people will be able to actually see their data from those meters as they implement that and get it integrated with everything else. So it's not like those first people who get meters are going to be able to go on the website right away and see their data, but as we get that developed, then they will. Whoever's got it at that point, they'll all see it.
I'll just offer a couple thoughts.
One more question.
Yeah.
With AMI and the benefits of recognizing outages, do you have any speculation on responding to how that impacts your outages? You see a decrease by a certain percentage. Doing some of that, have you thought about it that way, the benefits of that, as far as presentation to us?
I don't even remember to say before I offer anything. So.
The visibility provided by AMI will not reduce the number of outages we have,
response
but it will
time.
Certainly reduce the response time that we have to those. We'll be providing our We have a group of individuals at OtterTail that are outage management system specialists that are watching those systems 24/7 and deploying service reps out to our areas based on that. So our response time is improving with that, and AMI, we expect to make that even better.
Do you have a ballpark figure? I mean, working with vendors and other people who have deployed it?
Haven't specifically asked how more efficient we'll be. We do expect the systems to be more predictive as to where the issue is, because our, like we mentioned earlier, we're still doing it at the feeder level today, so we know what feeder is out or what feeder has the outage. Now we'll be able to predict, based on the outages that are reported by the meters, where to more specifically look for that outage, right? And whether it's the beginning of the feeder, the end of the feeder, the middle. So I'm not prepared to provide how much less time we'll have.
I wouldn't hold you to it.
Still not going to do it.
Thanks, Ben. I was only going to offer something very similar, which is that as we get more granular data, we actually expect our metrics probably will not look as good in some of those outage kind of instances, but it's actually representative of an improvement over time. Once you know we have better awareness of what's happening out there, then we know where to go, where to improve our system and have it be most effective. So that's probably what we are in the early stages of now as we make these improvements in our system in the next several years. I just want to close out the conversation here on this docket. This has been a really great conversation. We've touched on the critical issues. I mean, these are exactly the topics that we need to weigh. And, we went into this proposal knowing that these are the things to be discussed. Obviously, there's the balancing of the efficiencies created by a system that doesn't require us to be there in person for each customer with, those customers who aren't comfortable or don't want this technology deployed for them, and then how to share in those costs. And, we're also aware that the costs proposed here are higher than, anybody would probably expect to see. But in our decision as to if we're going to propose something less and share that cost more broadly, where's the sweet spot there? And where we landed in that decision was we're going to present to you what we believe are the most accurate estimates of the actual costs, and from there we can decide if we want to change approaches. So that's what we've talked about here. Again, I think it's been a really good conversation, and appreciate the time on it. And
one more quick thing on the variance request: you're just asking to remove the beginning and ending reading for the month. That's the only variance you're asking for.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. With that, I think we can close out this.
Well, is there anything else?
I don't have anything else. I think procedurally we need to think about this one a little bit more, because I don't think there's unanimity between the three of you on what you'd exactly like to do. But I'm curious if OtterTail intends to make any additional filings or comments of any kind.
We can provide information as a certain question comes up. We can do so, but I don't know if we intend to file.
Okay. I didn't think so, but I just wanted to clarify if based on the conversation, if you had any other thoughts of things you'd like to submit. But if not, then we may want to consider a work session to organize our thoughts a little bit. So that's all. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any objections to the evidence produced here, which would be the recording as well as the handout becoming part of the official record?
No objections.
Okay. So the evidence produced here this afternoon will become part of the official record, upon which a decision will be made. And this informal hearing on PU 23-275 is closed.